Women's Health Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Scotia Clinic Rathas Tralee, specialists in fertility and menopause.
Now, lovely as always to have Dr. Mary McCaffrey in studio with us. And Mary, happy International Women's Day.
And happy International Women's Day to you and to all of the women out there.
Listen, we're going to talk a bit about contraception this month. And I know we spoke about it before, last month or maybe the month before. But there's so much to it and so many different angles we could cover that we thought we might revisit it again.
And I suppose there's always new things happening as well. So I suppose the first most important thing to say is that the Minister for Health a couple of months ago, I think January, increased the length of the age group that can avail of free contraception. So it's now from 17 to 31 years of age that you're entitled to free contraception under the government scheme. So that's excellent. That covers almost half of the population. And for example, if you had a marina coil put in at 31, that would actually take you up to 39-40. So it is a really big thing. So I feel that a lot of people probably aren't aware of the wide range of contraception that's out there, and that there usually is something that is available that will suit every particular person, and that nowadays it should be really possible to find a contraceptive that's right for you.
Okay, and of course, your needs for contraception might change depending on the time of life you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the obvious ones that we think about might be young people starting in their first relationship, and they may or may not know much about contraception. So we would usually be looking at all the options for them. So just a quick whistle stop tour through what's available. We all know about the pill and variation. We shouldn't even call it the pill anymore, because it's more like hormonal contraception, because it's now available not just as a pill. There's a patch that you use. There's a vaginal ring that you can put in and change once a month. So that's variations on the pill. The pills are also very low dose. There's a wide variety of pills. We might use them, say, for other aspects of people's physical health, like polycystic ovarian syndrome. Certain pills might be more suitable. Then you've got to look at your lifestyle. Are you a person who's going to be able to remember to take it? Even with all the apps that are out there on the phones and things, people still can't do that. So you have the option of maybe an implant in your arm, which lasts for 3 years. Then you have the coils, and there are specific coils that are very suitable for younger people, and other coils like the Marina that are very suitable for people with heavy periods or whatever. So you've a lot of choices out there, and a lot more people now say, I want non-hormonal contraception. So often we'd sit down with them and try and figure out what that means for them. They don't want hormones in their bloodstream. So then we can look at things like the Kylena coil, Marina coil, explain that that doesn't have the hormones in your bloodstream by and large, that it stays within the wall of the womb. So it is important to have a good consultation and not just to rush into one thing. And I suppose for the younger people as well, we always say contraception will stop you getting pregnant, but it won't stop you getting the sexually transmitted infections. And we always recommend that they would use barrier methods like condoms in the beginning of a relationship till they're quite steady and sure of each other.
Okay. Just to zone in on the pill for a moment, Mary, there was a time back in the day when women had to try various different kinds of pill before they found one that suited them, because they were getting all kinds of side effects, putting on weight or whatever. Is that still the case, or
pills have come on a bit, and the doses of the pills are much lower, but very often people will still have to try and figure out which one of all of those pills suits them. So for example, some pills might, each pill has estrogen in it and a progestogen. Some pills might be less suitable for someone who's prone to maybe mental health issues or mood swings, so you'd be looking at tailoring that. Or some women might go on a pill and they might find that they've a lot of spotting and bleeding on it, and that might actually be really stressful for them, particularly say someone's a swimmer or whatever and they can't afford to be having bleeding all the time. So we would have to maybe start with a pill that's the most likely to work and then move on from that. Or it might be that say someone's epileptic and they're on other medications that might interfere with the pill, you'd go for a patch. Or someone who's celiac, ulcerative colitis, again the patch, or something else that's not involved in absorbing from your gut. So, yeah, there are loads and loads of options out there for people.
And is the pill, by and large, and I know you don't want to make a sweeping statement, but by and large, is that still the safest method?
Not necessarily, no. If you look at every contraceptive we talk about will be safe if it's used absolutely perfectly. The reality is we're all human and people don't use them perfectly. So the pill is, yes, very safe if it's used perfectly, but it has all of those variations in it that someone can forget to take it, someone can have vomiting and diarrhea, someone can have a drug that would interfere. I suppose ultimately I see the long-acting contraceptives like the progestin-containing coils like Mirena and Kylena. I would say they are as equivalent and probably safer than sterilisation. That's how safe they are. So they're probably the safest, but not maybe the most realistic for everybody. Because if you're putting in a Kylena or Mirena coil that's going to last between 5 and 8 years, but someone's planning a pregnancy in a year, well, that's probably not very sensible. So you've got to really work around the person that's in front of you.
So I presume there's different types of contraception for different stages of your life, like we said already. Yeah. What about, we say, a woman who's maybe in her mid to late 30s, heading towards 40, has, you know, completed her family, doesn't want to get pregnant again. Would she have, we'll say, different contraception needs and requirements to a young girl who's, you know, maybe 17 or 18?
Yeah, possibly she would. I mean, the pill or any hormonal method will still be very suitable for her. But if someone is overweight and a smoker, we'd be much more reluctant to put them, say, on hormonal contraception like the pill. And if someone says their family is complete, well, then the one we would always, well, I certainly would always zone in with them is something like the Mirena coil or the Kylena coil, which has less hormone in it, or even a copper coil, which has no hormones in it, because they'll get contraceptive cover for the bones of between 5 and 8 years, depending on which one they've picked. So that's, and it's in, and it's in for the 5 years or 8 years. And if they change their minds, which people sometimes do, they say their family's complete, and you'd be amazed how many people change their minds in
really?
A year or two.
Yeah.
Relationships change, people move into different relationships, all sorts of things happen. So I think it's always good to not make that huge decision quickly. I have to say, before I retired, I'd say I didn't do a sterilisation for nearly 2 or 3 years, because things like the Mirena coil have become so accessible, so easy. You put them in an outpatient or at a GP and that's it.
Yeah, and it's not as quite as final as being sterilised.
It's not as final as well. And you've also got to, and again, I said about, say, looking at people's lifestyles. If someone has heavy periods and they go for something like sterilisation, as night follows day, they'll be back to us within 5 years for their periods. And we'll be saying, do you know what? I think a Mirena might be a good idea.
Yeah.
So you've got to look at all these options. And I suppose the other thing just to point out as well is that traditionally in the old days, people took a 7-day break from the pill. It was kind of goes back to the whole religion thing that years ago when the pill was being looked at in the 50s, the churches still wanted people to have a bleed and women still wanted to know they weren't pregnant. But in fact, nowadays we probably recommend a 4-day break or a no-day break. We often use a no-day break. So we might have very young girls with, say, additional needs, say girls with autism now would be a very specific group that they get really freaked out by periods, they get really stressed by periods. Or you might have someone who's a very high-functioning amateur footballer or swimmer, can't afford to be having periods, so they can take those pills back to back and have no breaks and have no periods. Again, endometriosis would be another condition where that could be really suitable as well.
Okay, well, it does sound like there's options for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's a question of exploring it with your family doctor or a specialist.
Absolutely,
like
yourself. Family doctor, specialist. But remembering that the GPs are now in a position to provide free family planning for people between 17 and 31 years of age, which is a very important part of it. Now, the copper coil isn't actually covered. I just realised that within that new scheme, but that's actually the least expensive bit of it. So at least they're getting their consultations and they might have to pay for their coil.
Okay, well, you've given us a great overview there of the various types of contraception that are available, and no doubt listeners will have questions for you as well, Mary. And you've also brought in a new colleague who's going to chat to us about the kind of work he does at the Scotia Clinic. So we will take a break first of all, however, and we'll be back with more on the subject of women's health after these.
Women's Health Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Scotia Clinic, Rathastralee, specialists in fertility and menopause.
Now, Dr. Mary McCaffrey is staying with us, so please feel free to send in any questions you might have for her. She's been talking a little about contraception this month, but something a little bit different. Dr. McCaffrey has brought in Dr. Uzair Shabir, who is a specialist in lifestyle medicine and who's going to be has started working out of the Scotia Clinic with her. And you're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Is your first name is Uzair, is it?
Yes, Uzair.
Uzair, tell us a little bit about what you do at the Scotia Clinic.
Okay. Well, first of all, I would say, as Dr. McCaffrey said earlier on, it's International Women's Day. So I must acknowledge all the important women in my life. That's why I'm here sitting in front of you opening a service. So, you know, to my mom, to my wife, to my little Aisha, my daughter, she's 15 months almost, and to my sister and all the important women in my life and yourselves too. So I think pat on all of your back, you know, you've been amazing in everybody's life. So I'm really thrilled and grateful that I've been able to, you know, launch a service like this. So I think a lot of people have, you know, different understanding of what lifestyle medicine is. So first of all, I must just break the barrier. There's no magic involved. Look, it's an evidence-based branch of medicine where we work on the behavioral modifications to achieve sustainable changes in people's life. We empower people. So as opposed to conventional medicine where, you know, you go into your own GP. I myself work as a GP as well. Let's say you have a headache, let's say you have a high cholesterol, you go in, you have a bit of chat, there's a prescription given, and more or less that's it. Some GPs might go a bit far and counsel you a bit more, but you know, that's the end of consultation. In this one, it's the patient and the client is actually an active partner of the consultation. So we work side by side, and the aim of lifestyle medicine is through behavioral modifications impacting on things like your diet. So a nutritious diet, good sleep, positive social connections, removing harmful substances from your life, whether they are alcohol, smoking, or any other forms of drug abuse. Maintaining good social connection, having a good spiritual health, because we advocate for a body, mind, soul wellness, you know, because we feel that they impact each other. And also good stress management. Mental health, as you know, can impact hugely on different illnesses. So again, there's a big emphasis on that. And above all, physical activity, making sure that we are doing appropriate form of physical activity as recommended by WHO, which is 150 minutes, 3 to 4 times a week to maintain optimal health. Now, what does lifestyle medicine do? The aim is one, to maintain optimal health. Second, to prevent and treat the chronic medical conditions that you might or might not have. Or a recent example of how a change in environment led to a different situation. Let's take pandemic, for example. So, a pandemic came and suddenly our environment changed. As a result, people took different jobs, occupation changed, your job roles changed, your routine changed. As a result, people had different stress levels. Some were able to cope with it, others weren't. They got into different habits, lifestyle. They got into eating a certain way, moving a certain way, sleeping in a certain way. And as a result, they had illnesses that resulted in blood abnormalities. And finally, they were labeled as somebody having depression, somebody having diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and so whatnot. So you see, the precursor was, what started was environmental change. So you can't really detach an individual from its environment, from its lifestyle. So to address the problem in a holistic way, when somebody comes to me talking about maybe their cholesterol is a bit high, the sugar levels are a bit high. So rather than just talking about the medication, I normally go back a few steps. I was like, tell me about your lifestyle. What do you do? You know, what do you eat? How are things at home? Are you happy in your career? So, you know, these all things do impact us, and they manifest as a form of lifestyle changes, which further down the line will cause either benefits or harms, depending on which path you take.
And I could see why what you do can kind of complement what Mary does. Just,
yeah, it really does. And I suppose that's why I've always kind of felt this was something really important. For example, even the way Uzair does his consultations, I've learned a lot from watching that he is a lot more, I thought I was non-directional, but he's quite non-directional. The people in front of him have to buy into what they're going to do. Whereas if I'm saying to a woman, oh my goodness, you've osteoporosis, you've got to do resistance training, blah, blah, blah. When they go to him, he will focus on it differently and see, can they go to the gym? If I tell someone they must go to the gym and they won't do it, then they're not going to do it. Whereas he will tease out what will be right for them. And my young girls with PCOS, this will be so perfect for them because lifestyle changes is the cornerstone of their treatment. And equally, menopause as well. I can think of a woman I saw about 2 months ago and she came in. Her menopause symptoms were very anxiety based. I've learned a lot from that actually, because after the pandemic, a lot of people came in with a lot more kind of anxiety related symptoms. So they often come back to us after 3 months and say, oh, that dose of HRT isn't working. And there is a huge opportunity there for us to do one thing or the other. We might say, well, let's try more estrogen, but I've started to step back a bit more and say, let's look at your anxiety, so they can, what's causing it actually. Yeah. And that woman, it was actually a work based problem, not menopause at all. No matter how much HRT I gave her, she'd never be better. So they're the people that will benefit from it. And I think even women that say maybe had gestational diabetes in pregnancy or hypertension, high blood pressure in pregnancy, we know their risk of having cardiac problems later in life are huge. So there's an opportunity there to input and do something different.
Okay, and I presume people come into you and do you don't prescribe like a regular medicine like you would in your GP area of your life, but you might prescribe a different approach to how they live their lives or their diet or...
Yes, exactly.
Get more exercise or more time for themselves, that type of thing?
Yeah, basically it's complementary to your care with your own GP. Like I would always recommend anybody who sees me that obviously they have their own GP who have their medical records and their conditions are managed well. We do this complementary to that. So we will have a prescription in the end, but it might say, okay, you will be exercising whatever physical activity that you like. Maybe that's dancing 2 times a week. If it's going to be 30 minutes long, you're going to try to do it for about 4 weeks' time. You know, you're going to tell me what factors are going to be promoting those sort of activities, who's going to help you achieve that dancing class, who's going to look after the kids, who's going to mind the house while you do that, and these sort of things. So you will be, as we call them, a SMART goals, you know, so an approach which labels specific, measurable outcomes and time-based prescription, which the clients will walk out after having a consultation. And it will be based on what they want, not what I would recommend in a sense. So I'll be guiding them along, because in the end, I feel that, you know, patients are, you know, they need to be the biggest advocates for themselves. They know themselves better than I could ever know them in, you know, the amount of time that I'm spending with them. So it's what they like to do, what they have the motivation for. So that's the whole idea and premises behind this clinic that myself and my colleague, Dr. Neva Donald, we launched. And yeah, so hopefully we have a lot more information on our website, that is klmc.ie, and we have an Instagram page and Facebook page with it as well. So anybody who's interested, they can have a look at the page and get further details. And if you're keen, interested, you can book consultations with us. You can self-refer. You don't need a GP to refer you. It's all online. You can go on the website and all the details will be there.
Very good. We might just finish off. We just have 2 questions for you, Mary, before we finish up. A listener wants to know your podcast about lichen sclerosis. Were you talking about that before on this show? You were.
Oh, did no. I not put it up? Oh, mea culpa. I will get that up
podcast
next week.
About that.
That is goal for Monday.
Okay. And we've a lady who's 20 and she gets backache and period pain for a whole month before her period, and she only has relief from this while she has her period, and then goes back again to Any advice for her?
Yeah, well, that's unusual, because most people who come in will come with pain worse during a period. I think people think that everything to do with pain in their back and their pelvis will always be gynae. And it isn't, actually, because you've got your womb and ovaries in your pelvis, you've got your bladder, your bowel, you have the pelvic bones and muscles. So someone with pain all the time needs a very thorough examination and assessment of all the different areas. It might involve tests, it might involve an ultrasound, it might involve an MRI, just to figure out what is causing it. And I suppose it is Endometriosis Awareness Month, and we're always being criticised as a profession for not really focusing in on, and we miss endometriosis in the past quite a lot. I think we're more focused now, but that person really needs a very thorough assessment from top to bottom of their pelvis, looking at everything it could be to try and figure it out. Often it will be musculoskeletal a lot of the time, actually, and it's the sedentary thing that was there talked about. I'll never forget when we started doing clinics after lockdown finished, everyone was coming in with pelvic pain, but they'd all been sitting on chairs in their kitchen doing their job and going to the couch, and an awful lot of people had nerve entrapment and different things. So yeah, it's a very holistic approach needs to be taken to that case.
Very good. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, and we could talk away for a lot longer. But Dr. Azair, thank you so much for coming in and telling
thank
us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
It was
a pleasure.
Best of luck with it.
Thank you.
And Mary, thank you as always, and we'll see you next month.